while Ardsdale Baptist Church brings you the Word of God with practicality and simplicity. As you listen to this message, we trust that it will equip and empower you to find and fulfill your purpose.
Today's sermon is the last in our four-part series, My Phone, My Faith. And over the last few weeks, we've looked at the prominence of the mobile phone, the prominence that it plays in our everyday lives, and obviously in our Christian lives. For most of you listening to me right now, whether you're here in the room, whether you're watching back, on one of the channels, or if you're listening to the audio playback, no matter where you are, no matter who you are, no matter what you do, no matter what lifestyle you have, believe me, no matter what you see, touch, no matter what you carry, no matter what is important to you, this thing, your mobile phone, is typically 100%. I say typically because not everybody has a mobile phone. But I am telling you that you are with your mobile phone more than any single item that you have. Your mobile phone is your number one companion, typically. It goes with you to work, doesn't it? It goes with you to school, some schools. I really love those schools that say, sorry, no mobile phones. And you can see the children are like, oh, well, yeah, well, you know, no mobile phones. It goes to the gym. It goes to the restaurant. It goes to the restroom, to the bathroom, and more. It's a companion that can be found, you know, at the bedside. That's a hospital bed, a hotel bed, a bunk bed, a flower bed even. It goes with us everywhere. I was talking with a pastor friend of mine who, I think they'd gone online, they'd seen we were doing this series, and he'd asked me, he said, oh, what's this series about? You know, I really like the title. Now, we were talking about it, and talking about how the mobile phone is central to a lot of what we do. And he said, and I said to him, it's so important to so many people. He told me a story about how just a few weeks ago, a short while ago, he'd left home. He lives in Surbiton. And he'd been driving. I don't know where he was going. He'd been driving. He'd left him about half an hour driving. In fact, he was on the A3. So it's a fast-moving dual carriageway. When all of a sudden he realized he had forgotten his mobile phone. Guess what he did? He found a junction and turned back for it. Because of its importance, he realized that he needed that phone to stay in communication through the day. So, for something so important in our lives, how many sermons do we hear that help us to think about how we're using our mobile phones? And that's really what this this sermon series is about. It's about the merits and demerits, the benefits, the temptations of having a mobile phone. And I want to encourage you all to go back, whether that's on YouTube or on the church website, go back and listen to these sermons. It'll help you get a sense and get a grasp of what we've been talking about. Each of the sermons, My Phone, My Faith, each of the sermons in the series has a subtitle, which is designed to help us focus on a particular aspect of each week. In week one, it was a matter of community. Where I talked also about whether we're living in an actual world or virtual world. In this digital age, we say it's a virtual meeting. We're having virtual church. Well, virtual means it's not real. It can be online church. It could be digital church, but it's got to be real. And it's what's the quality of the relationships that we're having? Are they real relationships? Are they actual relationships? Or are they virtual relationships? In the same way that our mobile phone, you know, causes us easily. You know, how many friends have you got on Facebook? Oh, I got 2,000 friends on Facebook. No, actually, they're virtual friends. Some of them are actual. Facebook is a virtual environment. And so in week one, it's about us being careful not to be led into the isolation that the technology tempts us into, where it's just us. In week two, the subtitle was a matter of convenience. We're using mobile phones, you know, use it as a back scratcher. I heard someone use it as a bottle opener. Well, I'm sure they regretted that one. Our faith should result in something that is the opposite to our convenience. It really should. Our faith calls us to sacrifice. It calls us to pay. our faith, you know, and as we use our phones as a matter of our faith living, we should recognize that the phone is a temptation into a life of convenience rather than a life of sacrifice. The world, by the world standards, it says the majority carries the vote. The world teaches us to go with the majority. But in week two, we were led to remember the story where the shepherd left the 99 to go after the one. Week three, last week, a matter of capitalism. We heard from Pastor Jasmine, who was told, who also cautioned us about being enticed by the technology so that all we're doing is making money, money on the mind. Even though the scriptures make it very clear that it is impossible to serve God and serve money. So those were some of the, and in fact, she also asked some key questions last week. When was the last time you logged on to online banking just to donate to charity? How many of us have a budget for giving, a budget for just sacrificial giving? And I love this statement. She said, you know, you can be rich if you want to, but what are you doing with your riches? And that in some ways brings us to today. Today's sermon subtitle is A Matter of Conceit. And of course, with a title like that, it's only right that I throw out some definitions. What conceit is? Conceit is a word that we use. We use, you know, in the English language. We know it. But what does it really mean? The definitions I found talk about conceit as being an acceptably favorable opinion of oneself. Excessively favorable opinion of one's ability, of one's importance. Excessively favorable opinion. Another definition, thank you, you know the theology is in there, you know translation. Yeah. Another definition talks about conceit as excessive pride. You know, when we're talking about how our mobile phones can make us conceited or cause us to be conceited, for us to really grasp this, for us to really grasp the issues, we must understand the graduations. You know, when you talk about conceit and pride, what's at the other end of the spectrum? Humility, right? But there are graduations. No, I've never seen a situation where someone just goes from humility to pride. It's scales. There are graduations. And I think it's important for us to understand the graduations from humility to assurance, from assurance to confidence to arrogance, and then to conceit. And it's a very, very thin line between each one of them. Let's look at it. So humility, we know that we're supposed to have a humility. We're supposed to be humble. We're supposed to display humility. And it's something we should embody. But of course, yes, I say we should be humble, we should practice humility. But humility is one of the surefire ways for us to develop assurance. An assurance in who we are, an assurance in whose we are. Yeah, a deeper understanding of our purpose gives us that assurance. And when we develop assurance, it's then natural for us to grow in confidence. But here is the thing. It's typically not very long, and it's a very thin line that we need to be careful. Otherwise, our confidence can begin to breed arrogance. And it is a thin line between confidence and arrogance. And yes, you guessed it, arrogance is the step that comes just before conceit. So do you see the journey? It's not a long route. It's a simple journey. Humility, arrogance, confidence, humility, assurance, confidence, arrogance, and then conceit. And you see, it starts with being humble. It starts with being humble. Earlier on in the quiz that we had where Little Church won, one of the questions was, who was the chap that was, you know, that was thrown out of heaven? Why was he thrown out of heaven? Because of his conceit, his pride, his arrogance. Lots of I statements. But what was he doing in heaven in the first place? He was one of the angels. It starts with humility. And if we're not careful, we can end in the place of conceit. Some of you, I'm sure, have heard me talk about humility and what that actually looks like, particularly false humility. And I'm talking about false humility because, unfortunately, false humility is very, very rife. It's rife in our society. It's rife in our cultures. And it's rife even in the church. False humility. It's here. Too many people, you know, as the scriptures say, have a form of godliness. That's it. You know, they put on the show of humility. And that's where it ends. You may remember Sumi telling us last year about a conversation that she and I had about humility. Where I think she'd been asked to do something and she was like, oh, I'm not so sure about that. Oh, you know, I don't like these sorts of things. And where I'd said to her, you better be careful. Be careful about that not turning into pride. And I was encouraging her to watch against the spirit of pride because sometimes when we say no to something, it's not because it's not because of the Lord. It's not because of the other people. When we say no to something, sometimes it's about our will. It's not about God's will. It's about what we like, not about what God likes. It's about what we want, not about what God wants. There was a time when I was in church. I was in church, a while back. And one of the leaders was asked to do the announcements during the church service. And she said to the pastor, oh, that's not my thing. You know, pastor, sorry, I don't, you know, I'm not doing the announcements. It's not my thing. Yet, if you ask the leader, can somebody volunteer to come up and pray? She would have jumped up to do that. And it was something that she liked to do. You know, pray for someone, proclaim a word from God. She was happy to do that. Happy, absolutely happy to do that. But when she was asked to come and be, she was even asked to come and be an usher during one of the services. And it wasn't something that she would do. You know, she'd forgotten what the psalmist wrote in Psalm 84, verse 10, that says, one day spent in your house, this beautiful place of worship, is better. It beats thousands spent on Greek island beaches. It is better to be a doorkeeper in the house of the Lord. This is that verse, and this is what the message puts it. You see, conceitedness or conceit is rooted in our perception of ourselves. It's rooted in one's perception of self. So who do we think we are? Who do you think you are? What is your perception of self? And honestly, where has that perception come from? Who said that to you? Who told you that? What are the sounds that are reverberating in the echo chamber of what people have said to you over the years? What are the things that you're thinking and saying, oh, yeah? Because don't forget, it works the other way around. Some people have been beaten down, broken down, abused for a lot of their lives. And those words are ringing in the echo chamber of their minds, saying that they will not amount to anything. But it works the other way around. Our perception of self. So whose opinion has become your reality? Whose opinion has become your reality? Is it your own opinion of self that has become, or the opinion of others that is becoming your reality? Or is it the opinion of God that is your reality? Now listen carefully. I did not say, whose opinion do you prefer to be your reality? Because if I ask, whose do you prefer, everybody here would say, oh, God. My question is, whose opinion has become your reality? So if we believe we are humble, and we believe we're called to serve, and we say no, is that actual humility? I'm just asking. And by the way, just in case you're asking, you know, you're listening to this, maybe you're listening online and you say, the last time I was asked to serve, I said no. And, you know, you think I'm talking in absolute terms. Please, I'm not. Don't let the devil distract you from the point that I'm trying to make here. You know, you think, oh, well, I had to go to work. You know, what's he saying? I should leave work and go and help in the barbecue. Is that what he said? Everybody needs to just calm down. That's not what I'm talking about. As I said, don't let the devil start taking your mind into a place it's not meant to go, please. I'm not talking about the legitimate situations. I'm talking about situations where someone else, or something, I'm not talking about situations where, you know, you've got priority things to do. I'm talking about situations where you could have done it. You know the woman I was talking about earlier on, who was asked to do the announcements in the service? She was actually in the service. It's not that she was somewhere else. She was there. And she said, no, not doing it. So let me ask it this way. When you are given a compliment, when someone says, oh, thank you so much for what you've done, or, you know, I really appreciate you, and you reject the compliment, is that humility? I know this man, a church in Chadwell Heath, very, 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 very faithful man of God, well, brother in the Lord, well, man of God, I guess. And what he used to do every single week was clean the church. Actually, he did it twice a week. He would come. It's quite a large building, a large complex, in fact, larger than this. And he served faithfully as a cleaner in the church. And I remember from time to time when I'd go to the building, I'd see him and I'd say, wow, thank you so much. I won't say his name. Thank you so much for this. And you know what he would answer? He'd say, don't thank me. I don't deserve thanks. Only God deserves the thanks. Sorry, what? Only what? What's that? What's that? If you know someone who totally refuses to accept thank you, saints, that's not humility. It's actually pride. It's actually the other way around. It's conceit, the excessively high opinion of oneself. So when God says he has created you in his image, the image of the perfect God you are created in, will you reject that? Because for you to reject that is pride, it's conceit. Or what word would you use to describe it? The creator of the universe tells you you're special and you say no? What word would you use for that? When the Bible tells you you're the apple of God's eye, what word would you, and you say no, what word would you use for that? When Jesus says you're worth it, you know, don't say no. When Jesus says you're worth it, you know what you do? You flick your hair. Let's talk about humility for a moment. Humility, and the definition of humility, as it happens, just on the other side of this, humility is viewing oneself as lower in rank, or lower in importance, or lower in status, lower in significance than others. Not value. Not value. Aha. In Philippians chapter 2, we see a very, very, very clear breakdown of what humility should be, the characteristics of a humble person. And there, if you read Philippians 2 from about verse 3 right through to verse 11, it's listing the characteristics. It says, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. He goes on, Paul writes, he says, value others above yourself. He says, look out for the interests of others. Have the same mindset as Christ. So think the same way Christ thought. And this is Christ, who was equal with God, but didn't take advantage of it. Christ was equal with God, yet he didn't take advantage of his equality with God. It says, take the nature of a servant. It teaches us to be selflessly obedient. You know, in Luke chapter 14, Jesus was at a dinner party. And he gave some really powerful words of caution to the people that were there. He said, for all those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. Have we heard that before? I love the way the Message puts it. There's a lot of Message, you know, translation, Message Bible, Message, you know, today. I love the way the Message puts it. The Message says, if you walk around all high and mighty, you're going to end up flat on your face. But if you're content to simply be yourself, you will become more than yourself. If you are content to simply be yourself, you will become more than yourself. Now, some of you know this about me. I like watches. I really like watches. I own a few watches. Just over a year ago, I clarified this statement with someone that's here today. We were having a conversation about watches. I think I saw Emmanuel's watch, and I said, ooh, that's a nice watch. And I said to her, I really like watches. It wasn't Emmanuel that I had the conversation happened with. I said, I really like watches. And I was telling them about one of my watches that I bought for £2.99. And yeah, just like that, they chuckled. This person chuckled and said, oh, I thought you said you like watches. And I had to clarify. I did not say I like expensive watches. I said I like watches. Okay? Oh, by the way, just in case the Spirit of the Lord is telling you to buy me a £10,000 Tag Heuer watch, yes, please be a good Christian, listen to the Holy Spirit, and buy me the watch. Because I like all watches doesn't mean I don't like expensive. Let's be clear. I will receive that gift and I will happily wear it on my... I'll show it to you every Sunday. Anyway, I said I like watches. I just like watches. Similarly, as some of you know, my beloved Sumi. Sumi doesn't like watches. Sumi likes... shoes, absolutely. They said it. They said it before I did. Sumi likes shoes. And those of you who have been into the storehouse, you will know that she has a collection of shoes. She owns different shoes. I remember one day I saw a pair. I was like, wow, these are really nice. She said, guess how much? I said, I can't get, oh, guess. Oh, £25, £35, £45, £55. She said, stop, £5. I'm like, what? She owns shoes. And she has this pair of trainers that I bought her quite a number of years back. And she wears these trainers. She's worn them to go jogging. She's worn them when we're playing squash. She's worn them to go for a walk, go to the park. She's worn them to take the rubbish out to the bin or to go to the shops. All the usual things you do with your standard knockabout trainers. She has those trainers. And understandably, she has worn those trainers hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, maybe even thousands of times. Like I said, she owns rather a few pairs of shoes. One pair in particular that she owns, I don't know if maybe a couple of people might have seen them once. Really nice designer pair of shoes. I mean, really nice designer pair of shoes. They were given to her as a gift. And so you can imagine the value that she has chosen to place on those shoes. And believe me when I tell you, her really, really nice designer shoes, in all the years she has owned those shoes, I think she's worn them less than 10 times, fewer than 10 times. Now, here is my question. Is it possible for those shoes, you know, the fancy designer shoes I was just talking about, is it possible that those shoes have the right to tell Sumi that she shouldn't wear them to a dinner? She shouldn't wear them to somebody's birthday party, but she should wear them when she's popping over to church? Can the shoes say to her, you never wear us. When you're going to maintenance morning to do some cleaning at church, we want you to wear us. Can the shoes tell her that? That fancy roast dinner that you made for your guests who were coming over on Saturday afternoon. Can the fancy roast dinner say, why are you doing this? Why, just give them a sandwich. Can the dinner tell you that? Of course not. How can what is owned command the owner? How can the created command the creator? The height of conceit is when we don't recognize that we have become gods in our own world. Our mobile phones give us access to a wealth of information. They do. And this data is not just from the world in which we live, the world around us. This data is actually, it helps to create our own world. It creates a world right where we are, a world where we rule. Remember that the mobile phone helps to create that world, yet we have control. So the mobile phone creates a world, but you control that world. The one who controls the world is God. So in that moment, you are the God of that world. You see, in our world, we have become the gods. We reign supreme. No one tells us what to do in our world, let alone even what to believe in our world. No one sets the rules. After all, it's our world, so it's our choice. And saints, it doesn't have to be this way. In week one, I said it, that the mobile phone calls us to be rulers in our own world. And so what's in that world? What's in the world that you own? What's in the world of your mobile phone? And if the answer, what is center in the world of your mobile phone? And if the answer is you, then you have become the God of that world. And there are many ways you can assess this. There are many ways you can do a quick check and say, actually, what am I? Is this thing ruling me? Am I ruling it? Is it controlling me? Is it sucking me into this thing? Am I just using it without thinking? There are many ways to check this. But let me give you one very simple way. Simple one. Go through your phone. Go to your app where you've got your photos. Look through your photos. How many of the photos are of you? How many? I mean, you might not be able to physically count, but what proportion, what percentage? When you go through your photos and you're seeing 70, 80, 90% of the photos are of yourself, saying something's wrong, as in really wrong. And listen, there's nothing wrong with photos before you say I said that. Yeah, in fact, as I was thinking about it this morning, I actually went into my phone and I looked, went into the phone app. In my phone, as at this morning, there are 7,259 images in the photo app. I do like taking photos of things. I like saving photos of things. And I know a few of you are like that. There's nothing wrong with taking photos. There's nothing wrong with having photos of yourself, particularly when you look good, you know? You know, you look good, you look good, you feel good. Da-na-na-na-na-na. Time for a selfie. You know, have you ever, come on, man, why are you pretending, sitting there looking all holy like it's only me that happens to? I'm thinking, what? Look at this boy. He looks good. You know, sometimes, hey, there's nothing wrong with that. The question is, what's the proportion? What's the percentage that is of you? And it's important that you realize and recognize who the God of the world your phone is creating is. Your phone is creating a world. There's nothing you can do about that. But who is the God of that world? Earlier on, I talked about understanding the graduation between humility, assurance, confidence, arrogance, and then conceit. Here's the thing. If step one is conceit, right? And as you move through to step five, step one is humility, and you move through to step five of conceit. Look at each of these. Look at these. The more you move along the steps, from step one, humility, you are particularly or mostly outward facing. By the time you get to conceit, you're inward facing. Step one, humility, it's all about others. By the time step five, conceit, it's all about self. At the point of humility, things are least about you and most about others. At the point of conceit, they are least about others. They are most about you. And saints, we all know that God has no love for conceit or pride. We know that conceit has no place in the life of a Christian or even in the kingdom of God. We know this. And I'm going to end with these thoughts. In the book of Obadiah chapter 1, verse 4. It's only got one chapter, so you could also say Obadiah 4. The prophet wrote these words. He says, though you soar like the eagle and make your nest amongst the stars, from there I will bring you down, declares the Lord. When we heard the text read earlier on in the service, in fact, not just the text, but it was a warning from the book of Proverbs chapter 16 that says, pride goes before destruction, a haughty spirit before a fall. And we also had that wonderful instruction, that wonderful invitation, Proverbs 3:3, that said, let love and faithfulness never leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart. And this is the invitation. You see, when God says these words to us, He's calling us. He's calling us to hear these words. He's calling us to hear Him warning us about pride, warning us about conceit. He's saying we should wear love, wear them, love and faithfulness, as a locket that sits over our hearts. So when He calls us, when He invites us with these words, how do we respond? There's actually only one way, one appropriate response. There can only be one right response to a call like this. And that's taken from that text, which was also read from Galatians chapter 6 and verse 14. You see, when the Spirit of God, when by the Spirit of God we receive a caution, and then we hear the invitation, we must answer with the word saying, Lord, may I never boast except in the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ, through which the world has been crucified to me and I to the world. This is how we respond. The Message puts it this way, and I'm going to extend it beyond verse 14 to verse 16. The Message puts it this way. It says, for my part, I'm going to boast about nothing but the cross of our Master Jesus Christ. Because of that cross, I've been crucified in relation to the world, set free from the stifling atmosphere of pleasing others and fitting into the little patterns that they dictate. And then he says this, can't you see the central issue in all this? It's not what you and I do, submit to circumcision, reject circumcision. No, it's what God is doing, and that he is creating a totally new, something totally new, a life, a free life. That's what it's about. It's about submitting to what God is creating.
We trust that you've been blessed and believe that this message has brought you greater understanding. For more information or to follow up on what you've heard in this message, visit us on www.phbc.org.uk. God bless you.